Hello and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast. This is Mark Williams, broadcasting to you from Cambridgeshire in the UK. My guest this week is Christoph Tüdegat, a professional lobbyist with an extensive network in European institutions and European lobbying associations and in the shipping and transport industry, as his role as Secretary General of Sea Europe and CESA since March 2016. Christoph's an expert in European policy and legal matters, as well as in shipping-related issues with a particular focus on policy, social affairs, state aid, EU competition, security, customs, maritime law, and taxation. As well as his role as Secretary General of Sea Europe and CESA, he has a long history of working in public administration and comes with a Master of Arts degree in East European Studies from Leuven University. I wanted to speak to Christoph about the alignment of IMO and EU policies, as well as his work at Sea Europe and at CESA, and his take on likely future policy developments. So without further ado, let's hear what he has to say. It's fabulous to have you on.
Many thanks, Mark, and happy to be part of the podcast. Looking forward to the discussion.
Great stuff. Well, for those who don't know you, I can't imagine there are many in our audience, but for those who don't know you, perhaps you could introduce yourself and CESA and Sea Europe.
I'm Christoph Tüdegat. I am since 2016 the Secretary General of Sea Europe and CESA. But before that time, I spent nearly 15 years with the European Community Ship Owners Associations. And in fact, I started my career in the Belgian administration, being a Belgian citizen. And in fact, throughout my entire career, I've always had a link with maritime, with the maritime industry, be it transport, be it industry, from various aspects. In Sea Europe and CESA, we basically defend the interest of the shipyards in Europe and the maritime equipment manufacturers in Europe. What do we mean with Europe? We mean the EU member states. We mean Norway, Ukraine, the UK, and Turkey. And what's the difference between CESA and Sea Europe? Actually, before existence of Sea Europe, you had two different organizations, one representing the shipyards called CESA, the other one representing the equipment manufacturers called EMEC. In 2012, the two were merged. That became Sea Europe. And Sea Europe is, in fact, mainly active on the European level, so with all the European institutions and policymakers. But CESA was kept because CESA has a status in the IMO, in the International Maritime Organization. So in fact, we are basically more or less the same, but we just operate in a different arena.
Understood. Okay, thank you. And your work involves promoting the shipbuilding and the equipment manufacturers?
Shipyards, including shipbuilding, but also ship repair, maintenance, and retrofit and conversion. And indeed, the maritime equipment industry.
Now, that retrofit and conversion is obviously of great interest at the moment, because to reach the IMO's 2030 emission reduction targets, there's no silver bullet that's available in terms of fuel, but there are plenty of non-fuel technologies that are available.
That's correct. And I think it's fair to say that perhaps the shipbuilding part will be a bit easier to tackle, whilst the ship retrofit will be a bit more difficult, because, you know, that is done today with the knowledge and the technologies and the possibilities available today. But we all know that ships have a long lifespan in general. So, yeah, retrofitting them or making them fit for the climate neutral, green, sustainable, whatever you call the objectives for the future, that will be the biggest challenge, indeed.
And on that basis, what is the organization position that you have on, for instance, the EU's plans or the IMO's plans?
Well, as a matter of fact, from, I would say, day one, we have seen this climate debate and this green debate, green includes the climate, but goes further, also tackles other, let's say, climate, environmental-related aspects. We have seen them, and we continue to see them, as a very interesting challenge, but also as a very interesting opportunity, business opportunity. So we have, both in an IMO context and in a European context, we have actually always expressed our full support. We want to build the ships of the future, the green and sustainable and climate-friendly ships of the future, or retrofit them. And we want to produce all the technologies that, you know, will make sustainable and climate-neutral shipping of the future. So that is our position. And that's what we defend in a European context and in an IMO context. Of course, in the practice, the devil is always in the details. The question is, how do you get to that point? What is possible? What is possible today? What will be possible in 5 or 10 years? What sounds politically extremely interesting, attractive, or ambitious, but is perhaps not so feasible or realizable in the near future? And all these aspects, we try to have an opinion on them, an opinion that we discuss with our members. And, you know, shipyards and equipment manufacturers have, to a very large extent, similar views, but also there, sometimes the devil is in the detail. And that's what we want to do. We want to build, we want to produce the ships and the technologies of the future, and hopefully as much as we can in a European context.
So does that give rise to programs like the European Partnership on Zero Emission Waterborne Transport?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, this partnership, the one on zero emission waterborne transport, is part of the European Research and Development Framework called Horizon Europe. So when Horizon Europe was discussed 5-6 years ago, we basically had already the intention to go for a partnership. The reason why it became a zero-emission waterborne transport partnership was, of course, because this commission, under the lead of Commission President von der Leyen, made the Green Deal the flagship or the top priority. So we knew from discussions with policymakers that the best chances to have a partnership would be one focused on this climate discussion. And what the partnership is actually trying to achieve is to have, to speed up research, development, and innovation to accelerate green solutions and climate-friendly solutions, and to do it in a very dedicated manner. And that's the whole core of a partnership. That is that you go for projects that are really targeted to an overall topic. And this is, in this case, zero emission waterborne transport. And for that, we have achieved a financial envelope of 530 million euros, which is the first time that we have such a financial envelope dedicated to one specific target.
And this financial assistance, if you like, or the program is aimed at the high tech sector. European shipbuilding has largely moved out of commodity shipbuilding, hasn't it? And very much focused on passenger shipping or offshore, and the zero emissions shipbuilding seems to suggest or offer an opportunity for European shipbuilding to be competitive, because everyone's at the same place. We're all at year zero.
Well, it's a bit more complex. So first of all, the partnership is not just about complex ship types. It is, of course, also about complex ship types. And that is why we were very keen as Sea Europe, to put our entire support and political weight behind it. But it's very obvious that the European Union wants every ship that operates into European waters that enters or leaves a European port to be ideally climate neutral or zero emission. So also the ships that are not built in Europe fall under the scope of the partnership, which is a very good thing for our equipment manufacturers, because they produce the zero emission technologies that are sold everywhere in the world, including in Europe. And it's, of course, also important for the European ship owners who have to operate these climate neutral or zero emission ships. Now, does it help us to become more competitive? That remains to be seen. What do I mean by that? It is very obvious that this program partnership helps us greatly, helps us Europeans in our competition with non-Europeans, I would dare to say. But in order for the European shipbuilding industry to become again competitive with non-European shipbuilding nations, we need much more than just this partnership. This partnership is a very important element, but we need much more in terms of framework conditions in order to be able to fully compete with non-Europeans, mainly Asians.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the other elements?
What do you mean in terms of...
To make European shipbuilding and manufacturing and equipment more competitive with Asian competitors?
Well, that's a long discussion that already takes place for about 40 years or so. In fact, if you want to put it very simple, the difficulty that European shipyards, especially shipbuilding in Europe, faces already for about 40 years is that we are facing competitors in Asia that take their industry from a completely different angle than in Europe. What do I mean by that? For instance, in Asia, the industry is seen as strategic. In Europe, the industry has for a very long time not been considered as strategic. Only since the pandemic and the war in Ukraine, we see the realization that shipyards matter and are strategic for Europe. So already there, you see a fundamental change. And you also see that translated into policies. So in Asia, a strategic sector has a very sector-specific support in terms of finance, in terms of state aid, in terms of trade protectionism, you name it. In some cases, for instance, in the case of China, the industry is also government-driven. It's not just the economy part. It is really an instrument that should help the country in its position worldwide, and certainly also in the geopolitical tensions that we now have more and more. In Europe, we kind of dropped the strategic connotation for a very long time, and we also abolished our own state aid regime in the early 2000s. And the industry was actually considered, shipbuilding industry was considered as any other sector. So in fact, all the rules that apply to shipbuilding are the rules that you also see for other industries. And you cannot compete at the same level. So if I may put it differently or simplified, we are, let's say, four at the table: Europe, Japan, China, South Korea. I think these are the biggest ones at the moment. We play the same game of cards, but we play with different cards. And the ones in Asia have been, in the past years, in the past decades, much better than the ones that we had in Europe. What we were able to do, and that's why we still exist in Europe, is we basically managed to, through innovation, through a lot of investments in research and development, we were able to penetrate and develop the high-end shipping markets. And that's what we still do. And, we have a lot that we can still offer there. But let's not be mistaken. Our competitors are also eyeing to that part of the industry. And that is why we actually need in Europe a framework that will allow our industry in Europe, our shipyards, to become competitive again. And what does that mean? Well, it can go from reintroducing state aid to one extreme, into, I would say, full protectionism, and everything that goes in between. And everything that goes in between can be, legislation that helps the industry, that supports the business case, that favors certain segments over others, that makes it much more easier to get access to public funding or to private funding than it is the case today. So there is a wide range of possibilities that are politically, commercially, and or legally possible. At the end of the day, what matters is that industry and policymakers find something that, creates a win-win situation. And that's what we are discussing today. And that is what we are trying to develop in what we call a maritime industrial strategy. So a strategy that really will help shipyards and equipment suppliers and equipment manufacturers to be as competitive as possible, not just on the markets we have today, which are the high-end markets, but also on a number of segments that are strategic for Europe that today we don't have, but in the, interest of Europe and Europe's strategic autonomy, that is better to have back in Europe. That's what we are talking about.
Mm-hmm. was the press release that went out earlier this year saying that there should be more coordinated funding rather than small drops of maritime support across many funds. The maritime technology industry needs a dedicated maritime fund facilitating impactful investments in zero emission, sustainable and digitalized vessels and technologies. The wording from the press release that came out about 6 weeks ago. So is that part of the maritime industrial strategy?
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And it's also not new. In fact, the idea of a dedicated fund, whatever the name of that fund would be, was actually launched by us in cooperation also with the European shipowners when we were talking about the fuel EU maritime regulation, about the inclusion of shipping into EU ETS. The idea we had at the time was to say, look, if you want to make the polluter pay that money, if you want to speed up the climate neutrality and the sustainability of the shipping industry or the maritime sector as a whole, well, why not use the money that the polluter pays to, let's say, speed up investments to make, you know, the entire industry green and sustainable as soon as possible? Unfortunately, we did not. We were not successful for a number of reasons, merely political. And what we ended up with was a small maritime envelope, important, but a small maritime envelope in the context of one of the many EU financial instruments that exist, the so-called Innovation Fund. But the problem that we have in general with all these European tools is that they are all horizontal. So they all apply in the same way across the board to any sector. And what we need as a strategic sector is what we call a sector-specific approach, like our competitors in Asia do it. And the observation we have is that the current European tools, financial tools that exist, are very fragmented, are so diversified, but they have one thing in common when it comes to the maritime industry. The maritime dimension is actually not sufficiently or not reflected at all. So then you have to ask yourself the question, how are you going as Europe to meet your targets, knowing that climate neutrality and sustainability comes at a cost? And that cost has to come from somewhere, and public funding is an important part of that. And we found an existing instrument that is called the Maritime Aquaculture and Fisheries Fund that exists already for several years, but that today has only been used for aquaculture and fisheries, not for maritime. So our proposal has been, look, you have a dedicated fund, make it better, apply it to the three components, so don't forget or don't miss out on the maritime dimension. And you know, if we can use that system, then at least we have that in our hands. That does not necessarily mean that we will disregard all the other financial instruments. For all the other financial instruments, we ask for a better reflection of the maritime dimension. But the entire strategy that we have is, if you want to be successful politically and also commercially on this climate neutrality and on this sustainability, it comes at a cost, and that cost need to be supported. And therefore, you have, you know, the logic is that you also support the industry in its endeavors. And that means make the financial instruments fit for their purpose.
And are you getting any traction from the European Commission?
Well, at the moment, you know, we are, soon having European elections, parliament elections, and then there will be a new European Commission. So our discussions at the moment are really at the level of the commission services, so the functionaires or the bureaucrats, as some would say. And there is certainly appetite to listen, you know, to this dedicated fund, but also to the other, proposals that we have. And I think there is also a common understanding that shipbuilding and shipyards have been perhaps neglected for far too long, and something needs to be done. So that's really attraction that we see. How it will materialize at the end of the day, that's something that we will further discuss under the next European Commission. And then we will see how it play, how it is played out. But at the moment, we see certain appetite to go down the road of doing something specific for the sector.
One more question for you, if I may. You're in a unique position in some ways in that you have a foot in the door at the EC, a foot in the door at the IMO. And there's been a lot of noise in the shipping media, at least, about how EC policy and IMO policy need to align better. And there has been MEPC happening in the last few days, talking about the potential introduction for a global greenhouse gas levy. What can your industry partnerships do to achieve a better alignment between IMO and European Union policies?
Well, let's say our starting point has always been that ideally any solution should be international, so IMO based. Why is that? Because the maritime industry is, by its nature, to a very large extent, international. And so therefore, an international sector ideally needs international rules. Now, the problem is that, or the problem has been that for a very long time, there is a perception in European politics that the IMO is too slow or has been too slow, is not able to deliver and all that. And I think we all need to recognize that the agreement that was reached in MEPC 80 last year was very much welcomed, applauded, but was not to be taken for granted at the start of MEPC 80. I think if you would have asked all the participants to put money on the table for a successful outcome, I think that only very few optimists would have done it. And it is good that agreement was reached. And it also has shown the EU that at the end of the day, if there is pressure, the IMO can deliver. Of course, now we are in a situation that the EU has already been faster with the European Green Deal legislation, like inclusion of shipping into the EU emission trading scheme, the fuel EU maritime legislation and all that. And the targets there are more ambitious than the ones in IMO. So the question now will be, how are we able to bring them back? I think that the EU will acknowledge that at the end of the day, it's better to have an international framework that applies globally than regional legislation like the one in Europe. The other interesting thing will be, how is the next European Commission going to act on the green agenda? Because it's very clear that the von der Leyen Commission had the Green Deal as its flagship and its top priority. Now you hear more and more that we are very green, but perhaps too green compared to others, and that that also has some, let's say, challenges, and that that to an extent also impacts, potentially negatively impacts the industry, not just our industry, but the industry in Europe. So what you now hear is that the next commission may perhaps focus much more on, call it an industry or industrial deal, with green as a very important component, but, you know, a bit of a different, let's say, flavor to it. Then the question will be, if that is going to be played out, as it seems to be the case, will it then have an impact on the alignment or better alignment between EU and IMO legislation? We don't know. From our side, we try to be as ambitious as possible, be it at European level, be it at IMO level, but also in a realistic manner. And that means, you know, we have to go for alternative fuels. Fair enough. Which ones? What are the timelines? What are the technologies? What about, politically perhaps less correct, fossil fuels? We can all dream of a world without fossil fuel, but let's see, let's face the reality. This is not going to be the case tomorrow, not even next week, and perhaps not even next month. Does that mean that we shouldn't do anything? No, but it should also mean that we should be realistic. So we also have to look at, okay, if that is a fact of life, what are the technologies that can actually, that exist, or can be further mature, become further mature, to take away the negative aspects of, for instance, fossil fuel. So all these aspects, we are looking at them, and we do that in the same way in a European context as in an IMO context. And in that sense, it is true that we are in a fair, unique position, having the two hats. And I think that is also what is heavily appreciated by the respective policymakers.
Well, more power to your elbow in helping to align those two blocks. That's great. If people want to find out any more about your work, is there a website they can go to, or a membership association they can join? Or?
Well, there is certainly a website, www.ceurope.eu. And there is the other one, www.cesa.eu. The CESA one is a bit less developed, so you will find more flesh on the bones on the CEurope website. So you can find a lot of information there. We will further update it because we are a bit, laying behind in terms of the latest developments we have done. So we still need to keep our website up to date, but you can already find a lot there. And for the rest, our members are national associations in the first place, but we also have companies that are so-called corporate member. They need to be member of an association first. But we are certainly open to any interest that people may have. And, you know, that can be in terms of membership, but that can also be in terms of cooperation or some guidance where that is necessary.
Super. Thank you ever so much for that. Well, Christoph, it's been a delight to have you on. Thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the invitation again. And was, really a joy to have this exchange, and looking forward to a next occasion if there is
absolutely.
One point in time, an opportunity for that.
Well, I look forward to getting you back on when we've got more to talk about, for sure. And to everyone out there in listener land, thank you so much for tuning in again. This is Mark Williams signing off from another edition of the Ship Energy Podcast. Bye for now.